keep expectations low.
I don't even have any context around what that's about. It's like season 26 of The Simpsons, and I stopped watching it around about season 15 or 16, I think it was, from memory. But I'm Rob Calder, joined on the podcast by Zoe Carr, Fernando Rios Rodriguez. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you both back in. As a reminder, you can follow along on the Talking Split socials. You can just obviously follow along the pod, obviously, subscribe, rate, review, all the fun stuff in between. You will see up on the Talking Split socials this week, Accelerated Women has gone up for the following year. So if you are interested in that, by all means, follow the link and you'll be able to find the information in there so that you can apply for that. Before we get into the positive stuff, unfortunately, there is a little bit of stuff to deal with in the first place.
Rob's rant. He's on the mic complaining about stuff he just don't like, from bad parking to soggy chips. Rob's rants on Talking Split.
Now, this is one, Zoe, I will flag straight off the bat, that is not in your direction. However, you haven't been super supportive of some of my rants in particular. You will be on board this one. I am certain of it. So, where we have to be better as a coaching community is our post-game. And when I say our post-game, what the process is as we leave the playing area so that the next group can get into the playing area. However, we also have to be better coming into the playing area. Now, this is one that Darren Anderson threw at me, and he's like, hey, this would be a great topic. I was like, yes, we have been on this one for a while. We are diving back into it. After the game is finished, you shake hands, you grab your gear, and you get out of Dodge as quickly as you possibly can. You find an area where nobody else is occupying. You do your post-game chat, you know, whatever you want to go over. I would suggest no more than about 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops in that space, and you bounce out of there. However, the team that is about to play next... How about you give the team that has just finished an opportunity to get out? Because there are so many times you see an under-16 boys team frothing at the mouth because they're just dying to get on the court, run over the top of an under-12 girls team, and they just bowl over like Skittles. Our post-games need to be better on that end. We do have to move quicker. Don't take your post-game at the bench. That makes no sense.
Unless you're the last game of the night.
When Nando's playing at 9:40, do what you want. If you've got, you know, Kiel trying to turn the lights off, maybe take it outside. But ultimately, you've got a little bit of time. But if you're one of those earlier ones where you know there's a time slot coming straight after you, please move on quickly. But if you are the next game coming on, show a little bit of respect and let the team finish. Because it is a bugbear of mine that we've got literally little kids trying to get out of the way of kids that are trying to get into a warm-up. And I get it. You only get 5 minutes, whatever it is that you get. There's a way. Warm-up 2.0, you can do that off to the side. You can get all your jumping, your skipping. You can get warmed so that by the time you hit the floor, you're into layups or whatever it is that you want to do when you warm up. And then we're on from there. Just take a beat.
Absolutely. And what happens often is we can – love to get on the court straight away, and sometimes they're just straight away running up to the half court line and there's already bumps or near misses. But then when you get to your last 2 minutes and draw up on the board, four players go and get a drink bottle.
Yeah.
And it's like,
or go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's a little bit of trauma in this response. Yeah.
This is like where you can, you know, tell your team, just sort your drink bottles out. Don't have to put them on the bench, but near the bench on the side. So as that 30 seconds or a minute's going past, you're still engaging your players and they don't have to. It happened to me, I think, potentially 2 games ago where there was a player, he was trying to find his drink bottle and he just couldn't sort it out. And I just said, don't worry about it. You're not starting to get someone else in, because we were about to start the game. We had no game plan yet. So I was like, probably prioritize somewhere else rather than just straight away warming up.
Yep.
I can't stand people that stay on the bench, and especially when they it's coming from a lack of knowledge. I don't think it's I'm going to occupy this bench to be a pain in the butt or anything. They just don't know.
When they
all put arms around each other and you know it's going to be a long one and you're standing there with your whiteboard like, I just want to go sit down for 2 seconds before I start. Moving off the bench as quickly as possible is key, I think. But then, the same thing. And it's, you know, as Nando says, like when you start warming up, you don't have to be jogging up and down to the halfway line running over the teams that are shaking hands. Yeah. Like you could be doing squats or, active warm up and that sort of stuff that's a bit slower that gives them a bit of time to move on. But yeah, it's a two-player relationship effectively.
Oh, for sure.
Get out of the way as quick as you can. But then also, yeah, just if they are, especially if you can see that they're trying to get out of the
way.
I've been guilty of this, of when it has been that it's, you know, it's ticking over and they still haven't moved, and walking onto the bench and start putting my stuff down as a bit of a, hey,
any chance?
Here's a message. But yeah, if you can see that they're looking to move, yeah, give them that beat and allow them the time to do it, so then it can just transit. And especially too, like you see the amount of games, like particularly on Friday nights, and you're the 9:40 game, something's happened earlier on your court, so 9:40 is now 10 o'clock. And you're taking your time, and we're trying to actually get through it quicker to get things back on time. Like, just be mindful of that sort of stuff and the people that have to come after you.
Yeah, and where possible, keep drink bottles closed in the post game. Because I've seen no end of spills that happen after a game where a player takes the lid off and then starts drinking it, and all of a sudden someone bumps them, water everywhere, and it's like the next team coming in now has to try and navigate this massive just pool of water on the floor. So drink bottle lids closed, please, everyone in that space, coaches and players. Like, so on board?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Finally got one. So yeah. No problems at all. So in happier news, the African, Australian and Call camp on Sunday, Nando, talk us through that.
It was an amazing camp. We offered the opportunity for COLD young people from...
just explain what COLD stands for.
Yeah, cultural and linguistic diverse backgrounds. Offering opportunities for those young people who may have barriers. And when we say barriers, there could be language barriers, there could be cultural barriers, financial, transportation barriers, to be able to play the game. And obviously, being in my previous association, we had a large, diverse range of young people who were from COLD backgrounds. But we've ran this camp last year, and we ran it specifically just for the boys. This year, it was the first time ever we've ran an opportunity like this for the girls as well, which was history, but also really talented girls. We had 30 plus female athletes and 65 plus boys. We had all our HP staff involved on the day, facilitating the day, but with over 10 coaches from across Victoria affiliated with them associations and clubs, which was amazing to see. So we ran two sessions on the day. It was great, like, facilitation by the HP coaches and the network coaches to really learn the game and learn something out of it. That was really special. Like, we had a lot of people who also reached out who weren't able to come but were super appreciative of the invitation to come, and they were invested. And right after the shooting games they had towards the end of the day, they were able to watch the Country Metro 18s game for both the boys and the girls. And they stayed back just like they did last year. And a great example of you can't beat what you can't see. And they can see that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool experience. Zoe, that was obviously your first time being in. Like, we don't love to name under 18 athletes on this, but you had one of the girls that's in your program have a little bit of a talk to the players as well.
Yeah, she'd come down. She's part of the under 18 state team in the SPP. And yeah, she's pretty new to the game and is just a really exciting young talent. So she came down, and this is what I thought was really cool too. They obviously had their training in the morning and then a break, and then they had the single presentation and the game later. And in that break time, she came to the camp to watch it. And just that presence, like, was unreal. So put her on the spot, just like any good coach does, and just asked her if she would speak to the group of just about her, you know, her journey and things like that. And she was super nervous. She told me she's not great in speaking in front of people, like crowds, and she absolutely killed it. It was unreal. And I was like, I was watching her with this, I hope it's not on camera, because my face was like borderline gonna cry with pride of how great she was. And you just saw there was this, like, you know, I want to be like her. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to make these teams. There was this real sense of, you know, we can do this because of that, just that, what was it, 2 minute chat that she had with them, which was unbelievable. And it was unbelievable to see the growth in her too from when she's first come into the program to be able to do that. If I asked her to do that last year, there is probably no way it would have got done. But the growth in her to be able to then articulate her journey and the things that she's enjoyed. So, yeah, it was an unbelievable camp, and hopefully it can continue to grow as we make it a yearly event.
And this is where it builds connection, and that's where this athlete has felt. She didn't have as much connection 2 years ago. She has a sense of belonging and connection within her local and now state communities. She's also a referee, like involved in the game as well, because she loves it and she's staying connected within her communities. And then just touching on like the sacrifices some of these athletes made, like I would say just roughly 60 to 70% of these athletes are not exposed to structured basketball. Yep. They don't play in competitions in domestic, at best, potentially some of them. Some of them are the potentially the man of the household at times. So they may need to organise their siblings of six to get organised for school and breakfast and stuff like that. I've heard and know of many stories for these young people, and they're not mentioned, but this is what some of them are going through, and it's like nothing's happening for them. And the one thing they do have is basketball, and they put everything on the line when they do step on that court, to the point where they'll have to organise their transport. I know there's many of them that took two trains and a bus to be able to get there. A lot of them from the western suburbs, prioritising, and some of them even missing some rep trainings, I heard. So apologies in advance for that, for the clubs.
Complaints to Fernando.
No, your complaints to nowhere.
But no, some of the rep clubs were obviously supportive of it. They were also encouraged to invite some of their athletes down as well, in which they did, and just super grateful that we have this support from top down, from Basketball Victoria specifically. Like, this isn't something I felt as well, not only just being an employee for a very long time, and I'm just so grateful to be a part of this event. It was super special and something that we are going to continue to build.
I think one of the things that hit for me was at the very end of the day. So we had to, the HPs had to leave midway through the second session and go to the single presentation, and then came back and wrapped up the camp before the Country Metro Games. And we put our hands in at the end, and one of the boys said, Vic's on three, family on six.
Oh, love that.
And yeah, and it was awesome. And it was just like, this is really cool, because now we, as BV, are also a part of that family, which is great, because we want to be able to give all athletes, no matter background, economic, socioeconomic, you know, whatever, opportunities to be able to play basketball. So that was a real powerful moment for me, I think, on the day.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it is. And, I mean, you touched on it there, Nando, but for a lot of these kids, that's the vehicle for happiness. Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of cases too, with players being able to be around their family, around their friends, they're, you know, all kids are under pressure. Like, mm-hmm. whether we're aware of it or not, all kids are under pressure. Mm-hmm. But every family dynamic is different. Mm-hmm. So the pressure of, you know, one family is not going to be exactly the same as the pressure of the other family. But if they do have a community connection, that's something that's going to keep driving that, I think. And that's kind of the point of the whole thing, is that we don't want kids missing out because they're not aware of an opportunity. They're, you know, which happens all the time. Like, the amount of families you talk to, and it's like, hey, do you want to be involved in this? And they're like, oh, we don't even know what this is. Mm-hmm. Like, that sort of stuff. Or they don't know where to go. So by being able to engage that community, I think, is a really positive thing in that sort of space. And hopefully it just keeps getting bigger and bigger every year.
Absolutely.
Like, this is, I mean, it'd be fantastic if we can have like a couple around the state that people can go to if they want to go to them, those sorts of things as well, without giving you guys too much work to do. You know, that would be cool to be able to have. a little bit more access, I suppose, in that space too.
And it's stuff we do. I know I prioritize as well within my role as like state development coach. Like, it's not just within our state programs. Like, I do make visits once a block to these diverse associations and make a visit and educate them on the game as well. As well as there's a point of talent ID, because there has been, as we've seen in the past, some kids that we've been able to pick up that just haven't been exposed to the game as well. But just bringing it back to, like, when you say, like, that sense of vehicle and happiness, like, it all comes down, in my opinion, to their daily habits. That was my biggest focus when I was a director of coaching at Melton. It wasn't to make, you know, just good players. It was to make great people and to make them feel like a sense of belonging. But also, if they're going to have daily wins, like, they're going to be good at life. And a lot of these kids, let's be honest, they're not going to go to be pros. You know, it's a small percentage. So my focus was to make better people, and you know, that will help them in school. That will help them get to college. That will help them be, you know, better employed. And that was the broader vision I had for them athletes. And I think we still need to have that as coaches, and we do at times as well. So yeah, just making sure that there's this element of it's more to basketball there as well. And it was just so cool to see as well and hear that there's also now families and parents from cold communities coming together and making action. That's super powerful. Families that are on boards and making you know, domestic clubs for their young people, huge. They're taking ownership and leading the way, and that's where a big prioritization needs to be from. It needs to come from their elders as well, and you know, they're providing opportunities and access to the point where they're dominating some domestic leagues, I'm hearing, which is excellent. So yeah, providing access and opportunities, because we know there's a lot going on right now, specifically for young people, just in general, keeping them connected and winning daily habits is the perfect start.
Really love it. So congratulations to everyone that was involved with that. Nailed that one, Nando. But what we are into today is managing expectations. And, you know, with any coaching comes expectations from a number of different areas. And that's probably the challenge, is that we are under a lot of pressure, it would be fair to say, as coaches to one, just get to training sessions, it feels like, at times, and coach our games and those sorts of things, but also make young people better. That's all older people, depending on what's going on in your world, if you're coaching in the senior space as well. So we're talking about how, not necessarily not to let anybody down, but certainly how to make sure you're in the best position you possibly can to just deal with the noise that goes on around coaching. Because, you know, let's face it, for the 40-odd minutes that we coach the game, we've kind of got that under control to a degree. Like, that's when we don't have to worry about the outside noise for most cases, whereas all the other stuff that goes on in the periphery, that can be a bit of a drainer. And one of the biggest things, not to suggest that parents are drainers before anyone accuses me of that, but one of the biggest things we have to deal with is that parent meeting at the very start of a season, potentially. So I suppose my first question, Zoe, we'll throw it to you first. What would you cover in that preseason parent meeting?
Team level dependent,
yep.
So age dependent as well. It changes, obviously. We've said it several times on here before about, you know, under 14s and below, everybody should be playing, and there's no real excuse. And to be honest, 16s and 18s, the same. If you're not going to play them, don't pick them, and maybe have less players in your team. But that's another – I'm going off on a tangent. Mihai's not even here.
This could be past criticisms. new segment coming up.
But first of all would be what my expectations are to gain the ability to play. And what I mean by that is, you know, what are the rules going to be? Is it that if you miss a practice, you don't get to start? I'm not saying you have to do this. What I'm saying is, like, you put these rules in now. Or, you know, if we've got more and more athletes that are playing multiple sports, does leaving practice for that sport come into play, you know, all those sort of things. And we agree on those things at the start, and then that's it. Yep. So there's no issue in there.
We've all been there where at the start, okay, who plays footy or something like that as an example. and only one hand goes up. But then footy season rolls around and there's six people that are now playing and it's like, well, okay, the rules that we'd set out at the start may need to shift now by the time we get to this point too.
But it's also making sure too that the process for having a conversation, if the parents want to have a conversation, is put in place there as well. Coaches, you do not have to be at the beck and call of the parents or the athletes in your team 24/7. You've got likely a job, maybe a family, definitely relationships. Everybody has some type of relationship in their life, whether it be with a significant other or family members or whoever else they have within their life that need maintaining as well. So you need to I would set the boundaries of what that is. And what I would normally do is say, you cannot contact me until more than 24 hours after a game or practice. And if you do, you have to either text or email me if you want a meeting on what you want to talk about, because there is nothing more stressful than knowing you've got a meeting later in the day with a parent and you don't know what they want. You've probably got an idea of what they want, and generally it's, my kid's not playing enough, but you need to know what you're going into so you can have that data set ready to be able to counter things and de-escalate things, to be honest, because very rarely are parent meetings don't have that little bit of fire in them. The reason they're meeting with you is generally not to tell you you're doing a good job. So you want to make sure that you're taking all the information into that meeting that can help de-escalate that situation. But also that the meeting will be before practice. So then you've got an end date, because again, I made the mistake early in my coaching of making it after practice, and I was there for an hour and 45 minutes. And
when you didn't need to be. It could have been done in 20 minutes.
I was saying
minutes,
the same thing just, over and over again. Yeah, so it helps both parties be succinct in what they want to say and efficient in what they're going to say, because practice is about to start, and once I leave this room, we're kind of done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd put all those boundaries and those expectations in that meeting. I'd also tell them what they can expect of me. So, you know, I like to have I don't really like the theory of 16s and 18s, VC, you know, it's real deal and people can not play and you might not get minutes. Like nationals, okay, I can get on board that. That's a national tournament. 16s and 18s, I understand where it comes from. But, you know, if I'm going to go in there and say all kids are going to play, then all kids have to play and I have to follow through on that. And if an athlete's falling behind, then it might be that I initiate a meeting to talk about what we can do together to help them get, you know, more minutes in the game or be more effective within the game. So it's not, you know, you always see or you often see a team, they're up 30 and then in comes one or two athletes and all of a sudden it's back to 15, and you don't want that either. So,
yeah. You have problems with potentially a conflicting message there, because I'll walk back a little bit, like the whole don't contact me for 24 hours afterwards, which I completely understand. Like it allows feelings, emotions to de-escalate to a point where you could probably be a little more rational, like you're not acting on instinct at that point. What if, say, for example, a player is going to miss practice on Sunday? Like you've played the 7:40 game on the Friday night as an example. They're going to miss practice on Sunday. They forgot to tell you on the Friday night. Are you okay with that message coming in at, say, 10 a.m. Saturday morning?
Yeah,
even though it's inside the 24-hour window? Because I know how this can start at times. It's just a quick message to let you know they're coming, by the way. And that's when it tends to crack a little bit.
Yeah, so the boundary would be, because also things come up, right? Like wake up in the morning, you might have 9 a.m. practice on a Sunday and the athlete's woken up and they're sick as a dog.
Yep.
Like, so you need to be able to make that sort of contact.
Yep.
For mine, it would be that sort of contact is allowed.
Anytime.
Yep. Anytime. But it's via message. So you can have like a do not disturb. So to speak. But yeah. Also like a bit of a, you know, that doesn't disturb you as much, yep. Depending on what time that comes through. You know, you don't want to be saying to people that they have to operate within reasonable hours because not everybody has reasonable hours to operate in. But the if I would be saying to, if any more information comes in that, it will be ignored.
Yep.
Or and you'll have to, almost resubmit outside of the time, because the second you crack, and I know I sound like a jerk and I get it, but the second you crack, you give a little,
it's an opening.
It's like sure. Today's favor is tomorrow's expectation. And that's what ends up happening in these things. And then you become so overwhelmed. Yep. And so then what's the first thing you do when you're overwhelmed because of something that we're supposed to enjoy? You go, I don't enjoy this anymore. I'm not going to do it. And so, yeah, setting those boundaries and being – there's nothing wrong with, and it's kind of in life too, there's nothing wrong with being brutal with your boundaries to protect yourself and to protect your energy.
Yep. No, I really like that. And, I mean, the only reason I asked is because I have had, say, a problem that's come up on the Friday night, thankfully nothing to do with me, which was very much appreciated.
Nice but change it, too. Yeah. I'm kidding.
He's editing that out. Like it's, but something did happen on the Friday night. Parent contacted me at midday the next day and said, hey, look, I know this is inside the 24 hours.
Yeah.
This is just a heads up on what's coming.
Yeah.
Effectively. And to be fair, it was actually quite appreciated. They did let me know that this was what was coming. But it was inside it. So there are always exceptions to that. And that's the thing. Because I think for mine, if it leads to a more positive outcome, that I'm probably going to bend a little bit, mm-hmm. but I don't know that you want to break, miss it. Like that's the such a difficult line to tread.
Yeah, but then the hard part comes in. You bend for one.
Absolutely.
Now you've got to bend for the other that's the also
and that's where
more
the question came from.
Yeah. Like,
what if it's
so
inside
for mine,
24?
Again, I know it sounds harsh. No bending.
Yep.
Your boundaries are your boundaries. Now, you might get to May and go, I need to adjust this. And you can, by all means, you can do that. Send something out or let the parents know that, you know, the process has changed and it allows maybe a little bit more flexibility or because you feel like, actually, I can take a bit more or I can manage a bit more. But I'd always start strict and then figure out from there where your level is because it's I've seen so many coaches and more now – these days than say 10 to 15 years ago that are just exhausted by it.
Oh yeah.
They're just exhausted and we're losing them because of it. And they're great people, they're great coaches. But the relentlessness sometimes of parents is just dragging them down. And, you know, especially with times being the way they are now, it's very easy to go, I'm out. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's only fair that courtesy goes back the other way too from the coaching. Like if you need to contact a parent, same 24-hour rule
yes,
applies.
100%.
Like that's, it doesn't 100%. Like if you need to change training, obviously that's a slightly different situation. Mm. But yeah, if you need to catch up with a parent, then I would say the same thing. Mm. 24 hours afterwards, we need to catch up. Do you have availability here or here? It needs to be before the training session. Here's what I want to talk about. Mm. Like just so that they know, because straight away, defenses go up. The second it's like, hey, we've got a meeting, you either groan or you get real nervous about what's coming next in that sort of space. So I think that's a really good one to set that expectation in that first parent meeting is to like, hey, look, here's what I'm about, which I think is great, like the values, philosophy type side. Here's what I'm about as a coach.
Yep.
But if you're going to sit there and say, I'm a development coach, we're going to play everyone and we're going to learn and develop and then game three happens and all of a sudden you shelve some players, I can't protect you on that one. Like 100%. You know what's coming in that sort of space. I think a complaints process or I don't want to say grievances because it sounds way worse than it actually is, but, you know, what is the communication process? Similar with the group chat. Like it's, I'm happy to be in a group chat with the parents, but I don't need every message saying you need to transfer me $50 for this week because, you know, this will pay for the next five games or whatever it is. Well, I want to be in something separate to that where I, you know, the vital stuff, yeah, sure, I'm around and I see it, but I don't need to be in everything as well. Like, I don't need to know if someone can carpool with someone. Like, that's
absolutely,
it's just a message I don't need in that space. So, you know, I'm happy for a second group chat to be to be set up that I don't need to see in that world. But again, I would leave that with my team manager to say, hey,
but can I'd you also get this organized? I'd also say that group chat that you are in as the coach needs to be one of those one way WhatsApps. So people can emphasize on them to say that they've, you know, sort of seen them and stuff, even though WhatsApp tells you if they've seen it anyway. So it's not as big a deal, but they can't comment. And like you can actually set the settings that you can have that means they can't comment.
Definitely.
So now it's literally just information. So it can come from yourself or your team manager. And then the other group can be for questions and things like that, or they can contact if it is you know, looking to have a chat or whatever, they can do that privately.
Yep, absolutely. It's unreasonable. Like, I mean, what do you do now if parent expectations are conflicting, like especially early on?
I'll probably have to just add to the that presentation. It starts with the presentation, and I'm feeling for a lot of the new coaches that you're like, where do we start? Like, it's my first season here, which I had a bit of onboarding when I was in association land. It's okay to have your doc next to you whilst you present and or the doc to present it. That's fine. And I would, like what I did this year as well, is what our high performance manager presented to us as coaches, I copied that style to what I'm going to present to our parents.
Yep.
I don't want to go on a tangent and say this is my way and then their son or daughter is in another team and they got something else. I want to follow what our club is trying to deliver, so there's consistency and it makes it easier for the high performance manager and us as a club overall. And then I made some tweaks as well, just due to ages as well there, but I designed a slideshow presentation, I delivered it, I sent it to them. Like, I didn't want them to take notes. There's been times where I've been in parent meetings where there have been parents that have recorded other coaches without consent because they want to make sure, like, either like they get them by their word and something like that, and it's really secretive. Like, mind boggled that that happens, but it does. And the first thing I did when I did start the presentation was, this is going to be sent here all in writing. I'm happy to put my name on this because like I'm going to follow it. I want to make sure I'm there. And I basically as well added my coach presentation that I applied for to get the role. I put that into the presentation. I said, this is what I applied for. This is what I said to get the job. This is what the goals were. Not all the system of play or anything like that, but like enough for them to see where I was heading with it. Like expectations, like arrival expectations and my coaching style. Like, I'm quite an upbeat, I feel, coach. So just giving them the early heads up there on how I coach. What our goals were, and like Zoe was saying about like processes, I was pretty hard after I came out of that. I was like, oh, I think I came out hard and I felt horrible, but I'm so thankful I did it because boy, did it keep like an arm's like length distance away from like parents, and I still, knock on wood, haven't had any issues to the point where they just drop their kid off and they don't even watch anymore. Like, there's no parents that like watch the training, which is like so easier to, like, I can just coach now.
Well, it's a level of trust too, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, you've set that expectation early to the point where they like, hey, I know what's going on here. I don't need to stick around and chaperone or anything like that. Like,
yeah. It was quite thorough in regards to like, I set the bar high on myself. There were some things that I was like, oh, next time if I do this next time, is, you know, when, you know, trainings are, they're going to get sent a training plan every time before training. This is what they're going to expect. We're going to do a review on Tuesdays and this is what to expect. So they're a bit coming into it like, okay, this is structured. And like, there's a level of expectation that if I'm going to do this, that you're going to at least meet the bare minimum of the like estimated arrival times and whatnot. Also a crucial thing is, you know, asking the parents if your player is potentially living with a disability or has any learning difficulties or anything like that, please let me know. And the committee, individually as well, it doesn't have to be in front of everyone, just to give them that opportunity. And then the last thing I just wanted to really make a note of is like, really try and emphasize, as much as that didn't come across as like we're on the same team, like you want to be on the same team as as the parents. Like if they are coming late and they let you know, like be okay with that. That's going to happen. Like don't use that against them because then they're going to go
and
get
you. And don't punish the kid for that either. Like don't put them on the baseline and make them run a suicide for every minute that they're late.
Absolutely. Like please. There's a level of... like I get that as well. Like I can see that you guys are coming from, like we start some trainings at 5 o'clock. Like it's tough for them to, some of them getting out of work. So there's a, like I really appreciate that. So I need to be understanding of that as well as like we said on, I think my previous time when I was on the pod, like if they're not doing their homework, let me know. Let me know and we'll work on the same team and they're not coming to training. So they loved that aspect of it. And I actually just got a message yesterday from a player saying, hey, coach, sorry about that, but I didn't attend because I haven't done my homework. But I know we've got
the rule
trust.
Of mum and Nando is coming through.
I know. I'm like, Jesus. But, you know, there's that trust within that parent.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was like it happened on a previous as well. Like we've actually got to maybe do some homework clubs here. But I actually really went under the minimum of like the minutes. I felt horrible. And the main thing was he wasn't prepped. He wasn't prepped enough to get into the game. Like he would have seriously been lost out there. And when he went on his unders, the parent came up to me. She's like, thank you. And I was like,
yeah, right.
Is this like what is going on? Right. But we had that somewhat level of trust and teamwork to be able to say, like, I know I'm not going to make every training potentially on time, but there's a level of understanding. And then just last week, for example, like we went to Bendigo. I went to Bendigo with 11 players. And I'm like, I told them that like all of them would play. And that's something I've always said from the start of the season. But like I still made sure that there was somewhat even distribution of minutes. The last thing I would want is going and playing like under 5 or 10 minutes. Mm. It's just tough. And that's something that I was willing to sacrifice to still have and avoid, you know, an issue there. So, yeah, that's probably what I had there.
I really like it. Done a fairly solid job there. Pre-season with players. So we'll start over on your side here, Nando. So how do you set expectations with the playing group?
I would probably let a couple of the game. Oh, I did a presentation similar as well, similar to the parents on, you know.
Yeah, just a PowerPoint over here.
I love presentations. And I'll put it in as
do
well.
Do you use transitions?
No. Ashana does, though. Yeah. He's onto
he
it.
He loves a
and
transition.
Send it in
which
the chat.
Staggers me because admin is not normally his thing.
No, yeah. But once like he figured it out, it's. Yeah.
I think we can thank Jenny Scream for that.
Yeah, he's onto it. I sent a presentation and delivered a presentation to them. The biggest thing, even going with parents and players, don't go on what you can't promise. Like, don't like break your promises. Like, if you're going to deliver it, deliver it. Make sure you do it because they will get you by your word there. I like to see a couple of the trainings out. Like, I let the first phase go out before giving any roles because some players start to surprise you a little bit. So after the after grading was done, then I sat down with them and said, hey, over Christmas, this is what you can focus on. This is what your roles will be. There's a bit more of a, like, these are our non-negotiables on court. These are our non-negotiables on court and off court as well. And then just overall, like, respect when it comes to boundaries with one another there as well. So it was probably a formal presentation at the start, and then it was a little bit informal. And fortunately, they've been able to live by it there. But more so, like, having, again, understanding for players as well is really crucial. Like, look, we've been able to create some relationships where they've been able to tell us, hey, I'll let you know, like, I've just had two exams today. And I'm like, I'm just don't have the brain load right now. I'm just letting you know, like, I'm still grinding it out, but I'm just letting you know in advance, like, I'm not there right now. And, like, I really appreciated that, even though I was probably still going to go at them. Like, I still...
It's when, like, they come every week. And like, yeah, I just had two exams.
Yeah, how many exams do you have? Yeah,
which school do you go
like,
to?
I had that level of understanding and be like, okay, like, the first, second time, I'll probably, like, let it slide. But there's enough understanding and relationship there. You don't want to keep it just... You don't want to keep it two arms distance with your players. You want to have a level of trust there that they can be open enough to be able to talk to you with some stuff. That's probably what I would set. And let them own the values. Don't create values that you want because they might not want to follow it. Or they won't follow it. If you give them the opportunity to live by it, they said they want to do this, they should set the standard and follow it.
Yep, What about you, Zoe? Anything else with the players?
Well, that's like...
Because I really like that last point. And I know you've been in this position before with let the players decide this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk more from, I suppose, a senior perspective then. And, you know, if you're recruiting players for your team, you have to be able to tell them what role you expect for them from the beginning. And so, again, being, like Nando said, being clear with that, but don't lie. So
doesn't mean it can't change, though.
Well, that's, and that's the, where you've got to, you've got to say, you've got to almost give yourself an out. So the line I used to use is, you know, right now I would see you starting, but we haven't got our team together. I started actually going away from that and just sort of saying, or I'd say, you know, yeah, you're starting at the moment, it's yours to lose, which doesn't mean it's, you know, and similarly on the other side, you're coming off the bench, it's your job to take it. And so it's like, I'll switch it. If you're doing better, if you can help us,
for sure.
I will switch it. That's no problem, but you've got to take it. It's not something I'm just going to hand to you. So making sure you're clear on that and, again, follow through with what you're saying. As well as I think we get caught with, especially with recruiting for senior basketball at the moment, you know, budget's obviously a big part of that, and you know, you allocate X amount for each player that you're going for, and then one player says, oh, you know, I need $5,000 more. Start saying no. Yep. Like, it's not, I get it, you want to have the best team possible to be a good coach, you got to coach good players and all that sort of stuff, but it's getting a bit out of control. At the semi-pro or not even, you know, the domestic senior level.
Well, it hasn't hit the coaching departments yet, I can tell you that. Like the additional budgets definitely go towards the players. There are so many coaches that I know get paid to coach but just put their coaching payment back into the playing budget. Like it happens everywhere.
But you look at it too. So you take that off of somebody else, which now puts the player that you've given that extra money to on another level from that player. You have to now look that other player in the eye and say, I think you're worth less. You know, it's just, I just don't think it's conducive. You know, just move on to the next one. Find the next player that's willing to play for –
give a younger kid an opportunity. Whatever that – give someone in your pathway an opportunity, I think,
now,
in that one.
On that though – to be able to do that, you have to have had a conversation with your association or your club on what their expectations are, and be ready for that to potentially change, because that's happened to me in the past in C-ball of, you know, we want to try and win, we're going to do all of this. And then midway through the goalpost shift, and, oh, no, these players have to play and these, you know, and it's like, well, I can do that, but we're not going to win. And you told me you wanted to win, so that's how I've recruited this team.
Well, usually it goes the other way. Well, everyone comes in and says, oh, we're really only fussed about development.
Exactly.
And we see it in youth league a lot at the moment. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, but whilst we only really care about the development, we also want you to stay out of the relegation game. So we need you to win some games in youth league. And it's like, well, hang on. Like, I've been giving minutes to
– yeah.
the youth players to develop them, and now the goalposts shift.
Yeah, and so again,
and that's the relationship side where you have to be okay with both your club and your director of coaching, I think.
Yeah, you've got to be clear with what their expectations are, and don't be afraid to hold them to that too. Yep. I mean, I...
Would you record the meeting?
I wouldn't record the meeting, but I...
Got a full Nando here and my parents doing the shifty on the side.
But I'd certainly have a follow-up email of what we discussed.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, that's something I didn't do in that, and I wish I did, because I didn't have anything. You know, I got a lot of gaslighting of, you know, oh, that was never said. And it's like, it absolutely was. But so I would follow up with just an email about what we spoke about, just bullet points, to again, protect yourself. Now, I know in that situation wholeheartedly I did everything that I should have done. And I'm okay with that, but I still got sacked. So it's, you know, if I can look back at that and it makes it less hurtful because I know I did the right thing. So making sure you've got all that stuff in order. But sorry, circling back to the players, Nando's 100% spot on about if you're going to have values or standards, it has to come from them, and they have to then list the behaviours. So it's one thing to, like, if you say put some words on a board of what's going to we want to be known for, there'll be effort, resilience, togetherness. Those three will feature.
For sure.
And it's like, okay, so what are the behaviours that are going? And sometimes that part gets skipped. What do we have to do? Okay, so if we put, like, togetherness, what are the behaviours that are going to show that we show the world that don't know maybe that that's a value of ours or a goal of ours, but they were to look at our behaviours and say, geez, that team's together. You know, similar with, you know, effort and resilience and those sort of things. What's the 10-second
test? If someone was to walk into your practice, would they see those behaviours?
Yeah.
Or would they see those standards? Someone new, completely neutral, would they say the same thing? Or would they see two players getting chippy with each other and it's like, well, that's clearly not a together team in that sort of space too?
Yeah.
So I do think it has to be lived out and you do have to lead them down the path a little bit of that because I do think with players you can get the generic.
Well, that's those three words will always feature.
We've done this before. We know what the coach wants to hear. Yeah. You know, this sort of stuff. We're in reality very different.
Yeah.
Obviously, absolutely. In that sort of space.
But it's also then, once you've got the behaviours set, making sure that your leaders are people that have the ability to uphold that. So if you've got, you know, a captain or a leadership group or that, you know, use togetherness. If your captain is somebody that when things are going wrong for them start pointing fingers at others, that value's done. So making sure that – so I would do that before assigning any leadership role within any team. And then obviously you've got your – that all leads to a goal. You say what – you know, what do you want your goal to be? And they'll say to win the championship. Like, and so it should be. But there are also so many things outside of your control that might not allow that to happen. You might, and touch wood, this never happens to anybody, but you might have three major injuries in a year. And we've seen it happen before. You might have in your quarter, final game, you might have gastro wipe out your team.
It's happened. You know, played against the team at Nationals that had food poisoning in the semi-final. And we were freaking elated because we knew they were going to be – like, they dropped a game earlier in the week
that they probably shouldn't have dropped.
But, like, to the point – I think they only had, like, six players on the bench. Like, they were, and we were wrapped because we weren't super confident of getting them. They were one of those wild card sort of teams. But, you know, that derails a week.
So those things are outside of your control. So knowing that that's always going to be – that's why you're there. That's why you train. That's why you play. You want to try and win. But shorten your goals. Like, what, again, what are the behaviours that are going to help us win? It might be that everyone, you know, gets to at least one indie a week. It's that everyone is turning up to practice and is ready to go for the start of practice.
They're getting trackable.
Games on time, all those sort of things. You know, they're getting the right amount of shots. They're looking after their body. They're doing, you know, they're lifting. Whatever, and again, owned by them. And then once they put that together, those things should hopefully lead you to the main goal, which is winning. But if you've got that of just win the championship and you leave it at just that, it's going to make it, unless you've got one of those super teams, and even then,
stuff goes wrong.
Things goes wrong.
And just adding to that, like, avoiding being outcome focused, and even some coaches do it and I can see where they're coming from, but like saying and sitting your player down saying, I want you to be a 20 and 10 guy at times, especially in like juniors as well. If you say that to a junior kid, like they're going to count on that.
Oh, green light.
And we're getting to a point now where I saw on my phone actually an ad that now there's systems and applications that can help kids track their own stats. And it's AI generated, whether you can send it to them, you send them your game and they can track all their stats. So some teams already do that, but it's even more individualized on what numbers did I get. So you're going and moving away from the game even further, and you're moving like towards the numbers and not what the coach needs. So just be very cautious of outcome focused goals and more so habits. And the other thing I had was, you know, with player expectations comes honesty and accountability from the coach. There's going to be times where you will make mistakes, but if you don't own that, the player expectations will drop. And like there'll be times we've had it a couple, it happened to me once, it's happened to it in our senior level as well, where I've seen it, where we've potentially played a guy or not even played a guy, you know, from a senior space. But we've caught up with that player, giving him 10 or 15 minutes to decompress and let him know, hey, that was on us. Like, we understand, like, the game just got ahead of us and we understand that you could have had, you know, a break in. That's on us. That's so good from a respect point of view from the player to be like, okay, like, I know that wasn't me. And then just that, you know, reassurance of, like, next game, like, that, you're definitely going to see it. But yeah, that instinct where you weren't able to hit the floor at all, that builds trust from players. I know it's happened to me once where and a teammate where we got told, be ready. Be ready. Yep. Super. And I was absolutely like, I just come off an injury and I was like stoked because I got the be ready call. And that means like you're thinking it's a fair few minutes. And we took a bus to Ballarat and I was, you know, warming up the hands at times and, you know, doing a couple of stretches here and there. And it was just a DNP. And that was rough. And then to then not get any follow-up after that was disappointing. And then it was a text. And, like, that's the thing that some coaches avoid just talking to players. And sometimes it's the best thing to do is talk face-to-face rather than just a long text. It doesn't feel as connected and human. So yeah, avoid the be ready text unless you're gonna actually do it.
But it's also I think where sometimes, and it's a little bit of a tangent, but where we get caught with this stuff is as coaches we have to build relationships with our players, but those relationships have to have caveats. And what I mean by that is you can't be their best friend. Like, if you are too chummy with your at any level, again, you've got to build enough trust that they can tell you things that they need to tell you and that, you know, but it's the other way that if you're too friendly with your players, and I see this in a senior space a fair bit, like if you're going out, you know, drinking with your players or, you know, brunching with your players or that sort of stuff, it blurs the lines. And so then the difficult conversation has to be had, and now all of a sudden the player's confused. Hang on, I thought we were friends. And that creates a whole nother level of issues. So I'm not saying don't be nice to your players. Of course, definitely build a relationship with them, have a joke, have a laugh, but the line still has to be there for when it's time to go, you have to listen. And I'm your coach – who first. Likes you.
You also coach first.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everything else comes after that point. Like your job is to get them better, make them fall in love with the sport, you know, keep them in the sport. They're the big things. Your job, you know, at the junior level, senior level different obviously, at the junior level is not to win games. And I think that's something you have to be really clear on in these expectation meetings is, hey, we're going to try and win, sure. But we're not holding everything to this. Like if we lose every game this season, but everyone moves up two teams in 2 years' time, when you come back around to top age, we're putting that down as a win. Like that's a great result. But again, if you're clear with that at the start, then you can relate back to it. And that's the challenge is that at the start, everything sounds like a great idea. Then you get halfway through the season and it's like, oh, actually, I've got to try and walk this back somehow. And, you know, I'm being held to my standards. Yeah. It's like, yes, you are being held to your standards. Like genuinely put some time into this. Because I think the belief around this in particular is, oh, I'll just make it up as I go along. It's like, well, you probably can't because there'll be something you miss, something you, you don't really emphasize that actually does matter to you in that sort of space as well. You've got to be really clear with that. Mm. And, you know, I'm really conscious of the time, and I know you two have got another meeting to get to before we dig into the rest of it. But it is one of those things that you will get out of this what you put into it. And I know that's a really flippant statement that we hear all the time, whether it be school, basketball, or whatever the case might be. But if you can set everyone up with, like, clarity is like the buzzword of this generation, it feels like. Everyone is on clarity, clarity, clarity. Everyone wants clarity when it's going their way.
Yep.
People, and when I say people, parents, players will sit there and say, hey, there might be games where you don't get more court time than someone else. Everyone thinks that's not me. Mm. It's the first, that'll happen to someone else, but it won't happen to me. It might happen to you.
Yep.
And sometimes it's their fault, sometimes it's not their fault.
Yep.
You have to be very clear with, okay, well, here's what I'm expecting from you. Here's what you can expect from me. But hold yourself to that standard as well.
Yep.
It's one thing to fire shots and point fingers and all that sort of stuff. Oh, but you haven't done this. Well, have you covered off your part of the deal? Mm. Because that's an important part of it as well. So the expectation side of things, and there's two other roads we haven't gone down yet, which is directors of coaching and your own expectations. And we might save that for another pod as we come back into that. But the earliness of when you have to be on top of these things is getting more and more prevalent. Absolutely. And I would suggest it probably should start with your interview. If you are interviewing for a job, I would run those expectations past the director of coaching or whoever's hiring or whatever it is and just get some validation on those as to, hey, am I on the right path?
If you don't get the job because of it, be okay with that. That's fine because your values and your expectations need to align with wherever you're coaching.
Mm.
And so that means that that club or association just wasn't for you. It's not a, you know, it's not a mark on you. Mm. Hold that. You know, if I go back into clubland to coach, I will not skate on any of my I won't bend on any of them.
Yep.
And I know.
Are you concerned that makes you unhireable?
Maybe. And that's okay.
Yeah. No, it was a very open question. I wasn't having a crack. It is genuinely one of the, like, does that play in the back of your mind that I need to conform to what they are or vice versa?
The way I'd see it is I want to find the best place for me to coach. And the best place for me to coach, like I said, aligns.
Yep.
So
that's fine.
I don't want to be hired by somewhere that's going to say one thing and do another because that was awful. That was an awful time in my coaching career. I learned so much from it, so I'm grateful for it, but it was awful. I felt horrible, unbelievably stressed, hated basketball, hated a lot of people for a while.
I avoided that one, Nando, in case you're wondering.
But, yeah, so if that means, like I said, if that means a club doesn't want to hire me because of, I see it similar to, like I said at the start, about being strict with your boundaries.
Yep.
It's a similar thing. And then if I don't live up to the expectation or if I don't follow through on my values or my expectations – then by all means, remove me. That's fine because that's how we get better.
Yeah. So, well, that's more what I was saying. Like, if you're reasonable with what your values are, I don't think you're going to really run into too many places.
If your value is that you're coaching an NBL one and you want a $450,000 budget, that's not reasonable. Right, yeah. But
full autonomy to recruit and play whoever you want with no, you know, scope to develop anyone or anything within that. Well, yeah, okay, there might be a handful of places that are okay with that, but it's literally a handful of places and everyone wants those jobs. So you may not get those positions because they're hotly contested.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got to be okay
with that.
But you
got to think
about. Yeah, for sure.
When I say I wouldn't bend, I'd figure out what
where
I want them to be
and
then not bend on those. And again, they need to be reasonable.
Yep.
You know, I want to train on the court that we play on. Between 6:30 and
7,
you know, 8 o'clock, probably not going to happen.
We have to kick your domestic off for that, and that's not happening. Enjoy your primary school off to the side. But that's kind of what it is.
You know, it's figuring out what's reasonable, what aligns with you, and then find the place that aligns with that, and try and go for those.
No, like it. All right, we're into social split talk.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So this is a Jefferson Fisher soundbite. So he's the author of The Next Conversation, cracking book. I downloaded it on an e-reader, not realizing Zoe had bought the book as well. So two purchases in our household. But it is more about how to approach the difficult conversations. So obviously ties into what we've just been talking about.
This is the most effective tool that you can use for a difficult conversation. Number one, you're going to begin with telling them what you want to talk about. Number two, you tell them, and this is the most important, how you want to end the conversation, what you want to walk away from. And three, you get their buy-in into that conversational frame. This is what it sounds like. Let's say this is, I need to come to you and talk about something serious. So first I'm going to say what we need to talk about. Steve, I'd like to talk with you about some comments you made at last Thursday's meeting. Two, I'm going to tell them how I want to walk away. It sounds like, and I want to walk away from that conversation with the understanding that's not going to happen again. Three, I'm going to get their buy-in. I'm going to say, that sound good? You're going to say, yeah. Now you know exactly where we're going. You know exactly what we're going to talk about. You know when that conversation's going to end and how it's going to end. And now I have your buy-in. And it's like almost an invisible contract when somebody goes, yeah, that's good. We can talk about that. They don't want to leave it. They don't want to break their word. So they know that they're going to be stuck in it.
So real simple framing, I think, for any, and we've kind of touched on a little bit of this as we've gone through the pod. If you do have a parent meeting, for example, I need to catch up here about this so that we have this moving forward. Everyone will appreciate that. Like, you'll know what it's about, you'll know when it's going to be, and you'll know what the outcome is before you get there. How you get there is going to be different from everyone, but I think that's just a really clean way of framing it.
Absolutely.
Well, then, like, that's what I really like. Like, anytime you can follow Jefferson Fisher's stuff, I do recommend it. He's great on YouTube. Instagram, he always has those little car videos as well that are just really succinct ways of thinking about difficult conversations and dealing with conflict and the stuff that we don't really feel like we should have to deal with as coaches, but we end up dealing with as coaches, unfortunately. So would recommend a follow there as well, but just a really clear and succinct way, I think, to frame it out, which is always a good one. Zoe, Nana, thank you both for jumping in on the pod on this one.
Thank you.
Coaches, we will catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.